Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let's get to it. Let me start with game two of the Rockets and Warriors. Solid game two. Solid game two. Not great, but solid. Solid is a good thing, though. A damn good thing, because that series was on the verge of coming off the rails, and not in a good way either. It was because it had nothing to do with the guys who were playing the game. It had everything to do with the guys calling the game. That was after game one. It was all about the Rockets working the refs. And by working the refs, I mean crying about the refs. You know, not about James Harden, not about Chris Paul, but rather about how much Harden and Paul hate Scott Foster. About how the Rockets dropped a dossier alleging that the refs and the league actually cost them a championship last year. In other words, coming off game one, it was about pretty much everything except the main thing. Because that's when Scott Foster was assigned to that game. And then all hell was going to break loose. It was not a matter of who was going to foul out, but how many guys would foul out, and how quickly, and who would get tossed. I mean, I was expecting the worst. I think everybody was. Luckily, that's not what happened. In fact, after the game, you actually had comments like this.
I think both teams just realized what the hell was going on the last 2 days. You can't really turn a blind eye to anything in today's day and age with social media and all these things. So everyone was aware of all the talk about officiating and about foul calls. Come out and play the game. And I think both teams did a great job of that. They weren't complaining about many calls. We weren't complaining about many calls, because it's kind of embarrassing for the game of basketball. How much has been talked about fouls and officiating. Like, what about beating your man? What about stopping your man? No one talked anything about schemes the last 2 days. It's all been about foul calls. So I think both teams were just locked in on coming out and playing the game to the best of their ability. And you got to give credit to both clubs. Both teams did that.
Wait, what? Holy crap, was that Draymond Green? Yes, it was Draymond Green. And he had even more knowledge to drop.
Tonight, I think it was a great officiated game. You know, they let us be physical. Both teams, and you know, they made the calls that they need to make. You know, I think it was so much, it's kind of disheartening, for a game that I love since I was a child, to see the talk over the last 2 days was nothing about basketball and everything about foul calls. Like, is that what this game is coming to, that, you know, the talk is going to be about foul calls? Like, I love the game of basketball, so it was fun out there tonight. Like I said, they let us be physical. They let us play the game of basketball, which I enjoyed. I ain't really worried about a technical foul. It is what it is.
My guy, I could not have said that any better. In fact, nobody could have. And he was not alone. Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant also gave them some love. And again, it's a good thing, because what should have been the best series of the year looked like might be the worst after game one. And for all the complaining about the officiating before that game, there really wasn't that much complaining during the game. And if you get past Chris Paul lamely, mockingly celebrating one foul, it was actually all pretty straight, pretty legit. At least when it comes to complaining. Because the game itself was pretty rough. I mean, Golden State did what they had to do, and the Warriors were not about to apologize for how it looked, which is a good thing, because it didn't look great. For instance, less than 4 minutes into that game, there was Steph Curry dislocating his middle digit. If you haven't seen it, you probably don't want to either. It looked like one of those bent pens that chiropractors give you for free at the mall. You know, that free pen that you get with that free spinal exam next to that tool who's flying that model airplane around the food court? Or if you have to see it, if you want to see it, and you're watching on CBS Sports Network, I'll show it to you. Here it is. Look, that's just wrong. I'm no doctor, but I don't think I need to be a doctor to know that your finger is not supposed to have a right angle like that. I sucked at geometry, and even I know that. But as long as we're talking about jacked up body parts that don't look the way they're supposed to, not only that finger, how about James Harden's eyes? If Steph Curry looked like he saw something from the Saw franchise, Harden was The Shining. His eyes opening were like the elevator doors opening and blood rushing out. He took that shot to the face in the lane early on. He ended up bleeding from the eye. And then, of course, everybody came in with the oh-so-hilarious joke about how baked the beard was. Yeah, I guess if you hit the bong hard enough, it'll make your eyes bleed. Or if Draymond Green cracks you in the face hard enough, it will too. And he did. And if that's a regular season game, then the beard probably is not out there because he said he couldn't see and he was covering his eyes to shield them from the light. My guy needed to break out the Antoine Carr shades for the rest of the game. So, of course, when one future Hall of Famer has a jacked up digit and another has jacked up eyes, the game probably isn't going to be that watchable. And it wasn't. Golden State made sure of that. And that's got to concern the hell out of the Rockets. You know the old adage that a playoff series does not start until somebody wins on the road? Well, Houston better find something quick or that series is about to end. After going to Game 6 in L.A. only a few days back, Golden State's already up 2-0, and they haven't played their best basketball yet. Not even close. That's what has to concern Houston. Golden State's up 2-0, and they have not played their best. I mean, sure, Houston can con itself into thinking that both games were close. They could just as easily be up 2-0 as they are down 0-2. But they're not. And if they're not worried, they should be. Because Kevin Durant's had a pair of nice scoring nights, but he hasn't exploded. Neither has Curry. Neither has Klay. But they're absolutely killing the Rockets on defense and on the glass. They had 14 more shots than the Rockets. And if they go to Houston and they play that kind of defense and they get anything at all on offense, it's going to be a series. Thanks for coming. Time to work on a new dossier and cry about how the league ripped another championship from you. When the Hamptons 5 lineup is out there and they're locked in on defense, good luck getting anything going. They're shutting down one of the all-time great offenses in NBA history. Clint Capella, non-factor in Game 1. Only a somewhat factor in Game 2. The lobs to him that destroy teams all season are having no impact when you've got KD, Draymond, Iggy, Klay, and Steph out there. Hell, Steph damn near lost his finger trying to strip Capella in the first quarter, but there he was rejecting him in the second.
To Rivers. Rivers drives, bounce pass. Capella leans in on Draymond, goes up, blocked by Curry from behind. Curry took it away down the near sideline. Bumping with Capella, who's angry at the block shot.
Warriors radio. Of course, he's angry by the block shot. That was Steph Curry who swatted him. When asked afterwards if that block hurt, Steph said, "What do you think?" Like, yeah, it hurt. Tool. I have a dislocated finger that's bending 5 different ways right now. But when asked if he regretted it, Steph said, "Nah, I'm good."
Nah, I ain't got a block like that in a minute, so I'll take the pain for that, for sure.
Nah, I ain't got a block like that in a minute. I'll take the pain. I'll take the pain. Full-blown Dalton from Roadhouse. Pain don't hurt. That's how locked in these guys are.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
Pain don't hurt. I ain't had a block like that in a minute. Pain don't hurt. Speaking of locked in, now is a good time to show some respect to Andre Iguodala. Remember last year when the Rocket fans were talking about how the series would have been so different if Chris Paul were healthy? And the Warriors pointed out that it would have been so different if Iggy were healthy? Yeah, now you see why. 16 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, a monster on defense, and one soul snatching lob after another on offense and cleaning up on the offensive glass. Like, at this point, it would be ridiculous to say that Iguodala does all the little things because that would mean ignoring all the big things that he does. Just like it would be stupid to call this guy a heady player because that ignores how insanely athletic this guy is. And it would be insane to call him 35, even though that's what his birth certificate says. Even Steve Kerr, another Arizona man, is not buying that about Iguodala.
Yeah, Andre is, he doesn't look 35 to me, you know. He's just an incredible athlete. And what makes Andre special is, you know, when you combine that athleticism with that brain, now you got a hell of a player.
Iguodala said that if he had been healthy last year, it would have been a much shorter series, like 5 games. Well, he's healthy this year, and if Houston doesn't get right, if Houston does not get to the glass and take care of the rock and hit the beard with some Visine, this one is going to be over in 5 games. Because I know this, no way in hell Houston is going to beat Golden State 4 times in 5 games. Not if the Warriors lock in 2 more times. When they're locked in like that, Houston's not beating them. Nobody is. Didn't look great, but they did what they had to do, and you knew from the jump. You knew from the very jump that Golden State showed up, and when they do, you're not beating them. I know how frustrating it can be, especially if you're in a hurry or you're running late. You find yourself at a railway crossing. You're waiting for the train. The signals are going, and you can't even see the train. It's not there yet. So you feel tempted to try to sneak across the tracks. Don't do it. Terrible decision. Trains are often going a lot faster than you expect them to be. They cannot stop. Even if the engineer hits the brakes right away, it can still take a train over a mile to stop. By that time, what used to be your car is simply a crushed hunk of metal. What used to be you, what do you say we don't go there? The point is this. You can never know how quickly the train is going to arrive. The train can't stop even if it does see you. The result is the worst thing ever. If the signals are on, the train is on its way, and you need to remember only one thing. Stop. Stop, because the trains cannot. Cliff Kingsbury is my guest. Cliff, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So it's been about 4 months since you were named head coach of the Cardinals and since you and I last spoke. What have the first few months been like for you? And maybe what do you know now that you didn't know when you first got there?
Yeah, it's been fast and furious, you know, putting the staff together, getting ready for draft prep. You know, every day is you're finding something out new, discovering something you didn't know about the league. But it's been a lot of fun. Really excited about the staff we have here. And I think the biggest thing is the draft and the scope of the draft. I don't think I quite realized how much went into it, you know, the wealth of information you gather, how many players are actually evaluated. And so it's been a fascinating run.
Cliff Kingsbury joining us. So in terms of the draft, like when you're in college and you're assembling a roster, it's all about recruiting and pitching guys to choose you. In the draft, obviously, it's the exact opposite. So what was the draft experience like for you, and was it what you expected? I mean, I hear what you're saying about the scope, but what was it like overall?
It was a lot of fun, you know, getting to interact with a lot of young players that I coached against and got to know over the years in the Big 12 was fun. You felt like you knew them and had some extra insight there. And then having the first pick, you're obviously looking at all the very top guys. And so getting to know them, you know, hearing their story, how they operate, it was a lot of fun.
We're talking to Cliff Kingsbury. So, of course, everybody knows that backstory involving you and Murray. You saw him early in his college career. You knew he'd be special. What did you see in him then when you first saw him? And then what do you see in him right now?
Yeah, you know, it started his sophomore year in high school. That was the first game I ever went to as a head coach there at Texas Tech to recruit and watched him. And he was probably 5'5 then, 5'4. But he's a sophomore. Nobody could touch him on the field. He's running around, making plays. You know, he won a state championship, never lost a game. And, you know, just watching him from then on, you knew you were watching something special and something different. And at every level, he's proven it. And we're excited to get him here and see where it goes.
No, he's talked about how you guys have known each other since he was 15, and now you're together in the NFL. I mean, so, like, what does that feel like? Does that feel like that was kind of ordained and planned all along, or does that feel a little bit surreal?
Yeah, a little of both, I think. A little bit like the universe conspired in some ways to have that happen. But he's a super competitive, you know, super mentally tough young man that just has some really special talents, unique ability to take it 80 on any play and be the fastest player on the field and then beat you dropping back all day long with touch and accuracy and poise from the pocket. And so as an organization, it was just, you know, too great of a skill set to pass up.
Arizona Cardinals head coach Cliff Kingsbury, my guest. Now, you've been very clear also to praise Josh Rosen for how he handled everything. What did he show you in the way that he dealt with a pretty challenging situation?
Yeah, I said it all along. He was phenomenal. Our interaction was great. Very cerebral, very smart. Can throw it with anybody. Having you know, being around him for 3 weeks and getting on the field for 3 days, I think he's a very, very good player. And I think Miami is in a great spot with him as their quarterback. And so I'm excited to watch his development. And we'll be pulling for him.
Now, Cliff, in terms of your offense, you made the point that it's going to be very similar for Kyler Murray to what you were doing at Oklahoma or what he was doing at Oklahoma. How different will it be from what people might be used to seeing in the NFL? In other words, might it be more focused on the width of the field than maybe some other offenses? How is it going to be different?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're still determining, you know, exactly what we're going to be. We're obviously going to build it around Kyler and do things he's comfortable with and try to put him in positions to be successful. But we'll see how you know, this rookie class of receivers looks and what we have on our roster and build it from there. But it'll be, you know, a fun offense to watch with him at the helm.
I'm going to ask you about the roster in a second, but in terms of his development, do you expect him to start week one?
We'll see. You know, we're still working through all those things. You know, we have Brett Hundley here, who we're very excited about. But we'll see where that kind of goes.
I get that. you know, making the transition from college to the NFL is always going to be tricky for any quarterback. So in your mind, what would be a successful first season for Murray, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think just come in and do what he's always done. You know, he's always won games. He's always been very good at protecting the football and making plays with his feet. And it's going to be moving faster, obviously, and we're going to have our ups and downs. But, you know, knowing him, the poise he has and the toughness he has, I expect him to just kind of take that next step in his progression as a quarterback and continue to improve as a player. I think, you know, playing football year-round for the first time in his entire life is going to be huge for him. I can't wait to see how that accelerates his development.
Cliff Kingsbury joining us. All right, so he's got some other weapons around him, of course, including Andy Isabella. He's the second-round pick you had out of UMass. What do you like about his game, and what can he do on the field for you?
Yeah, he's kind of in that Julian Edelman mold, but has elite top-end speed, you know. Fast, can play outside, play inside. Good route runner, you know, tough. And we just liked how competitive he was. The biggest games he played in versus the Georges and the power schools is when he had his biggest games. And that's what you want out of a competitor.
And then the team also drafted Hakeem Butler in the fourth round. The story goes that at the combine, he told you that he wanted to play for you in college, but he never got the offer. Is that true? And if so, how does it feel to finally get him?
It is true. I definitely missed on that one. It feels great. I watched him for 3 years do his thing in the Big 12 and you know, be physical. And he's 6'6", runs sub 4.5, great contested ball catcher. So we can't wait to get him in our offense and give, you know, our quarterbacks another big target.
Got a few more moments with Cliff Kingsbury. Cliff, let me ask you about your approach for a minute, because what's already apparent is the work that you put in, the time you put in, and that's not new. As an example, Davis Webb, who played for you at Texas Tech, said, quote, "I've been around some great coaches and great workers, but I've never seen anybody like Cliff," end quote. So my question is, where does the drive and that willingness to put in those long hours and study every piece of tape come from?
Yeah, I think my parents, you know, they were both educators. My dad was a high school football coach. My mom was a teacher. And they always taught us about, you know, hard work pays off. That was kind of the one mantra they had. Eventually, no matter what you're going through, if you keep grinding, keep working at it, good things are going to happen. And so I've always tried to live by that.
So back in 03, you spent some time with the Patriots, which meant that you were going to be around Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And I've heard you refer to them as, quote, kind of the mountaintop of preparation and competitiveness. You can see why they win so much, end quote. I mean, again, you've always been about preparing and competing. What was it about them that stuck out to you and resonated with you the most?
I think just the level of preparation, whether it be mentally or physically, both those guys. Bill has every situation covered that you could possibly imagine with his teams that could pop up any given Sunday, and that's why they're so good in those situations. And then with Tom, you see his whole life is dedicated to being the best quarterback to ever play the game, whether it's what he eats or how he sleeps or how he trains. So to see that level of preparation day in, day out, it definitely impacts you.
All right, so finally, day in, day out, it's May 1st. The season opener is 4 months and 7 days away. Does that feel like you've got a lot of time, or does that feel like it's not nearly enough time for everything you want to get done?
It's a little of both, I think. I'm excited to get the rookies here, get them going, you know, get our offense, defense, special teams installed with them. And I think once they're here and you feel like your team's a little bit more of a whole, we'll really be rolling.
He is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. And, of course, they did select Kyler Murray with the first pick overall. On Thursday night, the season opener is September 8th against Detroit. Cliff, great to have you back. Always look forward to the conversation. I appreciate that one, too.
Thanks, Jim. Take care.
New month, new guy. First day of the new month. New month, new guy. The training wheels are officially off. The new guy is flying today without his co-pilot, Ross Geller. Geller bounced and left the XR4TI yesterday to go apparently save the San Gabriel Valley, one city council meeting at a time. Let me stop right there. And again, nothing but respect to my man, Ross. Ross, a great dude. He had great energy, showed up early, left late, made the room better, contributed to the chemistry of the program, had good lettuce. But the first guy ever who left this industry to get into city government. Most people want to leave city government to get into the show. My man went the other way. Like, most people dream about getting to the entertainment industry. Man, if I could just get out of this dead-end job. Man, this sucks. I'm at the DMV. Man, this sucks. I got to work for the city. I'd give anything to be in showbiz. Ross was in showbiz. He's like, man, this sucks. I'd give anything to be in city government. Actually, he never said this sucked, but he had a different calling. So Ross is gone, and now we have a new guy. And if you've been watching or listening this week, undoubtedly you have heard all the guesses as to who the new guy is. All the more reason to make sure you have CBS Sports Network. Some of you still do not understand this. This is a simulcast now. The radio show, which has been a radio show in some form or format since literally 1987, late 80s, has been a TV show now for close to a year and a half. Almost a year and a half. So you can actually listen and watch on CBS Sports Network. And you want to do that because the show can be really visual at times. Monday and Tuesday prove just that. I've said it before. I'll say it again here. Nothing gets by you clones. And all it took was one camera shot of the new guy on Monday. I didn't even announce it. They just went behind the glass to show the XR4TI like they do every single day. And there he was, the new guy. It triggered an avalanche of guesses as to who that might be. My guy Randall in the OC started the entire thing when he emailed, who's the new guy? Bruce Willis?
Yeah!
That's Randall. Again, no mention of a new guy. I was just going to kind of roll that out. I was going to have a soft rollout for the new guy. It took 5 seconds before you all realized it. And then that was the first of about 100 guesses over the next 2 days. And before I reveal officially who the new guy is, why don't we first review who the new guy is not? Starting with Randall, the new guy is not Bruce Willis.
Welcome to the party, pal.
These are all actual guesses. These are not things that I made up for effect. The new guy, as much as I wish it were, is not Michael Stipe.
That was just a dream. That was just a dream.
REM is still one of my top five favorite bands. Love it. Speaking of bands, the new guy is not Peter Garrett of Midnight Oil. But that was one of my favorite guesses. And while that was one of my favorite guesses, this might be my favorite guess. The new guy is not Dwight D. Eisenhower. Somebody look it up. I think I have the same birthday as Dwight D. I'm almost positive. Damn, that'd be so awesome if Dwight D. Eisenhower worked on this show. Dwight D. and I have the same birthday. No, dude. Come on, bro. Me and the new guy have the same birthday. Damn, now it's getting weird. Now it's getting weird. I didn't know that. I just said, I think that Dwight D. Eisenhower and I have the same birthday. And the new guy goes, wait a minute, that's my birthday. Wow, dude. Weird. Anyway, I still wish Dwight D. Eisenhower worked here. Then we could celebrate our birthday together. It's not him. It's not Dwight D. Eisenhower. It's also, and again, these are all actual guesses from the past 2 days. The new guy is not Scott Van Pelt. The new guy is not Moby. A lot of musicians look like the new guy. The new guy looks like a lot of musicians. That said, he's not, right said, Fred, too sexy for his hair.
Too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts.
He's not, right said, Fred. The new guy also is not the asset.
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
It's Jason Bourne.
No GD bomb to go along with that. GD, it's Jason Bourne. No, the asset is not the new hire for the show. The new guy also is not Mills Lane.
That's when you know what the answer to that question is.
It's not Mills Lane. All actual guesses. Who is the new guy? I'll tell you who it's not. It's not Phil Collins. All right, are we ready? Are we ready to do this? I'm not. The new guy's not Ed Harris.
We never lost an American in space. We're sure as hell not going to lose one on my watch. Failure is not an option.
It's not Ed Harris. The newest member of the XR4TI is not Jason Statham.
And I pronounce you man of knife.
I wish it were. He wishes it were. It's not. All right, I need to get on with my life. I need to get on with the program. The newest member of the XR4TI is not the Snake Man.
Never leave the Snake Man alone with Little Alvy. He'll definitely eat him.
I think that was Orion yesterday, calling yesterday as Conor McGregor. You've had your fun. It's time to move along. Ross is gone. The new guy is in. The new guy is... not Mr. Clean.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it. Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean.
Not Mr. Clean. Not Mr. Clean. Not Kojak. Not Yul Brynner. Not Ernie Shavers. Not Buddha. Is there anybody else? I think I've covered it all. I could do it all day, but I won't. Because if I do this all day, then you will do it all week. And if you do it all week, you'll do it all month. And if you do it all month, you'll do it all year. I mean, hell, you're still riding Hawk unmercifully every single day. We're not doing it. It has run its course like all good threads, even the best of threads. It has run its course. So, who is the new guy? Come to find out, he's got the same birthday as me. And Dwight D. And John Wooden. And Thomas Dolby. Sorry to disappoint you. Why are you looking at me like that, Alvy? Well, then don't look at me like that if it's nothing, bro. The new guy is... sorry to disappoint. He is none of those people, but... officially and formally, I introduce to you the new guy... Garrett Ritt. Garrett Ritt. A guy who liked his last name so much that he jammed it into the back half of his first name.
It's lit.
It's Ritt.
It's lit.
It's Garrett Ritt.
It's lit.
He's Ritt.
It's lit.
It's Ritt.
It's lit.
It's Ritt.
It's lit.
It's Ritt.
It's Ritt.
It's Ritt. I can't hear you. There's too much bleepy money in my ears. It's Ritt. It's Ritt. It's Garrett Ritt.
It's lit.
It's not Moby. It's Ritt.
It's lit.
It's not Ed Harris. It's Ritt.
It's lit.
Garrett Ritt.
It's lit.
A sports radio vet with over a decade of experience. We are damn glad to have him here. Every member of the XR4TI has welcomed him and is happy to have him here.
Welcome to the party, Pat.
Garrett, from me to you, it's great to have you here. If you make it to the end of the week, you outlasted Ross. As an example of his expertise, Garrett has been working to book our podcast. Garrett turned Mark Cuban. We have not spoken to Mark Cuban in years. My man's important. It's Ritt!
It's lit.
This is the value that he brings to it. So there is your newest member of the XR4TI, Garrett Ritt. Great to have him here. Clones have had your fun. Now, I can't say what to do or what not to do. Just know that he brings a ton of experience and something significant to the proceedings. I don't hire dopes. I take a lot of pride in who has come through here before. Guys have gone on to really impressive things. And then some have gone on to nothing. But mostly, guys have come through here and gone on to really impressive things. Some guys, like Alvy, thankfully, do not leave. Alvy has gone on to amazing things by staying right where he is. Keep that in mind, Garrett. It's Ritt! You know me, I'm a paid professional. a paid pro to keep you clones in line. Also, they pay me to interview the right people in sports. I've got some more advice for you. It can help you. When you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. When it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or even just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. My guest is Ryan Palmer. Ryan, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How are we doing, man?
Good.
How's it going?
Good, bud. Good. Listen, Ryan, is it true? Are you sitting on a John Deere right now?
I just turned it. I am on my place. I'm sitting on my John Deere Z535 zero turn mowing our pasture area around the house at this moment.
So tell me about that bad boy. What kind of a rig is that? Is that pretty good to
it's
be on?
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. You talk about relieving some stress. Well, there's no stress right now, but, you know, we got some grass that needed to be mowed, and you know, when you got mama telling you to mow, you go mow.
When you got mama telling you to mow, you go mow. I feel ya. Happy wife, happy life. Happy mama, happy llama, or something like that. Hey, Ryan,
yeah,
so before we talk about the win, let's go back. The Zurich Classic is a two-player team event, and your previous partner, Jordan Spieth, had made a schedule change, was not going to be playing this year. So how did you go about getting in touch with John Rahm and asking him to partner up? How did that go down?
Yeah, no, I've known John since 2015. We played together at the Phoenix Open together. He was still in college at Arizona State, and then played some other rounds together. And I had him at my charity event last year here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and got to know him real well. And what a guy, you know, very thankful to be a part of it, very honored to be a part of it. And then we played with them last year. Me and Jordan played with he and Wesley Bryan. And, you know, Jordan wasn't going to play this year, and then Wesley had shoulder surgery. And, you know, talking about Caddy James, we were wanting to play and trying to find the right partner. And I thought, let's call John Rahm. We know his caddy, Adam Hayes, real well. So I texted Adam Hayes and mentioned it, and he thought, oh, that'd be great. So I shot John a text and said, hey, I know you don't have a partner. I don't have a partner. What do you think about teaming up with an old man, 42 years old on tour, and going to Zurich? And he jumped right on it, and now here we are.
Here we are. Ryan Palmer joining us. Now, you and Rahm have a little tradition going on with his caddy, Adam Hayes, who you mentioned by name. It involves Skittles for birdies. What's that all about? It sounds pretty fun.
It started Thursday. You know, we were playing with Bubba and JB, and they had their little knick-knack thing they were doing, and we were trying to – we did something funny on 8, no big deal. But then on 10, John chips in, and Adam had a bag of Skittles because he knows his kids love Skittles, and he goes, here, have a Skittle. We just made birdie. Let's go. On Thursday, I think, afternoon, and birdie 12, birdie 11 – and I said, hey, let's do another Skittle. We made a birdie, and then it turned into Skittles for birdies. And so every time we made birdie, I looked at Adam and said, let's do it. Skittle time. And the rest is history.
Ryan Palmer joining us. This is great. Now, as long as we're talking about some of the fun parts of that tournament, going to New Orleans means to get to hang out with your guy, Sean Payton, and play a little bit of golf with Brett Favre. What was that part of the experience like?
Yeah, that Wednesday was cool. Sean told me Monday or Tuesday that he was bringing in Brett Favre. He brought in, you know, we played with Drew Brees a couple years ago. Last year, Sean brought in Roger Clemens. So he told me Brett was coming, which was awesome. I never met Brett Favre, and what a guy. I tell you what, just a cool, down-to-earth, good old country guy. And we had the best time playing, and we got to pick at him a little bit. But we had a blast playing golf. And then, of course, being good friends with Sean has been so much fun. And our big rain delay on Thursday, they told us we had about 2 or 3 hours before they made a decision. So I called Sean. I said, hey, we're going to come over to the facility and hang out. And he said, come on. So 8 of us went over there and turned on the machine, and we were working on our punt fielding skills, which weren't very good.
What a great week. Ryan Palmer joining us. And then on top of that, it's your first win in 9 years. So I've got to ask, what were the emotions like when it was over and you knew that all that hard work and all the battling had paid off and you cashed that one in?
Yeah, it was. It was 9 years of the grind, you know, from practicing all the time, wondering if you're ever going to win again, to losing my putting, to getting it back the last couple of years. And then, you know, the 4 years ago, losing my dad suddenly, and then, you know, the last 3 years going through with Jennifer and her breast cancer and knowing what she's been going through and, you know, what our family's been going through the last couple of years. So all that just kind of come alive and to finally win a golf tournament again. I can't even put into words what it felt like, and the emotion came out. I mean, Jen and I both were crying. My son was there, which was even more special. You know, I was 12 years old, and he hasn't got to watch Dad win. And to me, that was the ultimate right there.
That is so good. Ryan Palmer joining us. Ryan, you mentioned your wife, Jennifer. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. What was that diagnosis and then the resulting treatment like for you and your family?
Yeah, I guess it was 16 in July. She found out she had stage 2 breast cancer, and you know, it just hits you in the gut. You know, you never know how could this happen, and you know, you start thinking about the future, what's going to happen. And I ended up taking off the fall that following fall to be with her during all of her chemo. And you know, you just kind of live every day. You're blessed when you're around each other now. And you know, with the kids, I mean, she was so good going through all that. I mean, you never would have known she had cancer. Just, she got up every day, put on makeup, went about her day like nothing was wrong. And, you know, you can't be more proud of her. And I told her after we won, I said, babe, you deserve this more than I do after everything. And, man, what a day to get to share.
Ryan Palmer joining us. You know, you mentioned also, Ryan, your father passed away, Butch. He died tragically in a car accident. He was the one who got you into golf, but he was so good about it, right? He always made sure that it was something that you wanted to do. He never pushed you. What kind of an impact did he have on you as a person?
Yeah, everything to him, obviously. He got me in the game at 9 years old. I played other sports as well, and he coached me a little bit here and there, but you know, he never pushed me to go out and work. The only thing he really did push me is how I acted amongst others, the way I was on the golf course, you know, when you get frustrated or whatever. But as long as I was being the right kid, you know, that was the main thing. And he never pushed me to go out and play golf every day. And so, but I'm the man he is. I'm the man I am because of him. And, you know, it would have been awesome for him to get to see this. He got to see me win, and the other three, obviously. But, man, what an emotion it came down to, knowing I kind of gave a look up, nod to the gods, and I know he's up there with some friends watching and celebrating.
We're talking golf. We're talking family. We're talking life with Ryan Palmer. You mentioned friends. Ryan, you, of course, are part of the secret golf family with my man Steve Elkington. How did you first connect with Elk, and what's it like to spend time with him?
Yeah. I've known Elk a long time. He played golf at Houston. My caddy James played golf at Houston, so I've known Elk a long time. And you know, when he came across this idea and brought it to me, it was an easy decision for me. And we had a blast spending our time at Colonial when we did all of our videos for our page on the website. And it's really cool because he's right there in front of you. He's not going to sugarcoat it for you. He's up front and personal. And he's always a blast to be around. And you know, it's an honor to be a part of his endeavors with Secret Golf, and yeah, it's kind of cool to get another win in there for him and for our group.
So, Ryan, finally, it's not just a win. Like, you're on pace to have the best year of your career. So how have you gone about taking care of your body and your mind to put yourself in position to have the kind of year and success you're having right now?
You know, I started doing a lot more work with my body, with my Dr. Troy Van Beezen here in Dallas. He does a lot of work with me and my workouts, my training, my treatment to my body. You know, I'm very more cautious when I put in my body now. Less beer, unfortunately, sometimes. But it's, you know, in the mental-wise, I work with Neil Smith. He's kept my mind right there in it every time. And I couldn't have a better instructor than Randy Smith right now, working on my game. And, of course, having James Edmondson by my side through and throughout, you know, they keep me mentally focused, strong, and you know, I've got a great team around me to help me go out and do my best.
You know, Ryan, finally, it's so true, right? You are what you think, and you are what you eat. So if you're limiting the amount of beer you put in your body right now, I get that. I respect that. But what's the beer of choice? If you allow yourself one, which one are you reaching for?
I've always been a Coors Light guy. But, you know, we're not a beer drinker anymore right now at the moment. So, but that's probably my choice right now.
I got it. I see it working. PGA Tour golfer, he won the Zurich Classic with John Rahm over the weekend. 4 top 10 finishes on tour this year, and once again, number 19 in the FedEx Cup rankings. Ryan, congrats. Really nice to have you on the show. I appreciate the conversation.
Hey, Jim, I appreciate it. I'll get back to my mowing.
You do that, man. Yeah, I got you. All right, Ryan Palmer getting back to his mowing. He's on that John Deere. So we live, obviously, we live in a visual world. Ask Garrett Ritt. We live in a visual world. Where seeing is believing. It's no longer good enough to recount something to somebody because we all subscribe to this, don't we? Picks or it didn't happen. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Tell any of your friends that you bumped into a celebrity. They're going to want to see the pick. And if you don't have one, your story never happened. You made it up. Those are the rules. I didn't write them. I just know them and I adhere to them. Those are the rules. So if I were to tell you the third-year Panthers running back, Christian McCaffrey, showed up to offseason workouts looking like Arnie Governada back in the commando days, you'd probably say to me, show me a pick. Where is the pick? I've got your pick. I've got it right here. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, here it is. If you're by your phone or a computer, go to the Panthers official Instagram feed or just Google Christian McCaffrey, because this Adonis didn't just break the internet. He freaking bench pressed it and he put it up 25 times. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, then this one is worth 10,000 hours in the gym, throwing the iron around. Because as my man Jocko likes to say, those weights aren't going to move themselves. There's Christian McCaffrey getting his work in, running cones. And he's got legs where his arms should be. Seriously. You got to see this. It looks photoshopped or CGI'd, except it's not. This dude really is that yoked. And I can't tell whether he cut the sleeves off his hoodie or if his bazooka cannons just exploded right through them. My man's got biceps on biceps. And if you think I'm overselling this, then you have not seen the picture. Clearly, this dude was not on the Ryan Fitzpatrick diet, a pounding birthday cake on days that only end in Y. Pretty sure his calendar looks more like this. Monday, arms. Tuesday, arms. Wednesday, arms. Thursday, arms. Friday, arms. Saturday, arms. Sunday, arms. You know, not like Fitzpatrick. Monday, cake. Tuesday, cake. Wednesday, birthday cake. Thursday, angel food cake. Friday, chocolate cake. Saturday, bundt cake. Sunday, double bun cake. Hey, look, this is not to say that McCaffrey is that gym douchebag who skips leg days and only does upper. Obviously, that's not the case. Those tree trunks appear ready to run over whoever the hell is unlucky to get in front of him. We already know he's going to run away from anybody. We already know he's going to juke you and make you look bad. But he'll run over you, too. I'm just saying that it sure as hell does not look like this guy walked past the incline press once without getting on it for a long time. And in between all those bench sessions, my man was probably snorting straight whey protein powder. You know, I'm just having fun when I say that. I'm just having fun when I said my man was probably blasting rails of whey protein. But he's getting his protein one way or another. I'm actually scared for the linebackers in the NFL. About to catch one of those stiff arms. Man, just pull up, fellas. Don't be a hero. Do not be a hero. The NFL is all about player safety. I don't think they want anybody getting impaled on the field. Although if McCaffrey did have somebody draping halfway up his elbow, hanging off him like a rag, I'm not even sure that would slow him down or if he'd even notice. So on a talk show, where y'all can't wait to kill somebody for getting up there in weight, for adding 5 pounds, for getting plump, for getting fat, y'all better line up to shine this guy for getting swole. Give Christian McCaffrey some bleeping credit. For real.
Give them some credit. I mean, for real.
For real. If you're going to blast anybody and everybody who gains 5 pounds, give this guy credit for getting that swole. In fact, if there's going to be 3 different fat alarms on deck, then we better have a jacked alarm. Is that so, Alvin? Fair is fair. Let me have a jacked alarm for Christian McCaffrey right now.
What you gonna do?
Let off some steam, Bennett.
Army out!
If it feels good, you ain't doing it right.
I hate it,
Bennett. I die for this, dog.
I love it.
Yeah. I live for it.
I'll be back.
What you gonna do?
Let off some steam.
That's pumping me up.
Army out!
That sounds so much better. That's positive. That's positive. It's upbeat. It's motivational. It's inspirational. It's the jacked alarm.
I die for this dog.
Christian McCaffrey inspired. I die for this dog. I gotta hear that thing on endless loop. Oh, that's so good, Albie. Hurry up, Hawk. I got Cliff Kingsbury coming up next. Let it roll, Albie. I love LeBron showing up. That is great. Romy, let it play, Albie. Romy, we have the same birthday move is brilliant. Regards, the dude that brings donuts for the entire office to cover for the fact that he actually overslept by an hour. G off in Lincoln.
Donuts.
Hey, Rome, the name Garrett Ritt does not sound redundant at all. Sincerely, fat American. Lee in Vancouver. We're not talking about fat Americans. Not while the jacked alarm is playing. God, I just love LeBron in the background with that guttural roar. I'm trying to get to break, but I want to hear that again. My guest is Mike Rupp. Mike, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm well. It's a nice diversified lineup you got here today.
Yeah,
like
right?
That.
Appreciate you saying that, Mike. Thanks so much. Hey, listen, going into the first round of the playoffs, Mike, it seemed like there were some pretty safe predictions, but then pretty much everything was turned on its head. So what do you make of what you saw from the first round, and how much does that change the way you view the rest of the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen anything like this in the NHL playoffs before. I mean, all these favorites that have been ousted in the first round, the one common theme right now, and it seems like every couple years you kind of have a few outliers as far as maybe teams just play a little different. They have different attributes, just seem to be giving teams fits. And this year it's the one of just kind of by committee. The star power isn't really getting it done this year in the NHL playoffs. And that star power has been frustrated by these teams that have this by committee approach. And they're working extremely hard, and they're outworking. They're just frustrating teams. So we've kind of seen the get away from that in the last number of years, and right now it's just timely goals and just relentless pursuit of the puck and frustration on the superstars.
Mike Rupp joining us. I would imagine one of the teams you're talking about is Columbus. The Blue Jackets sweep Tampa Bay in the first round. They're up 2-1 on Boston now in the second round. How do you explain what John Tortorella's crew is doing so far in the postseason?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, when you look at the last couple seasons, though, this team's gotten beat in the first round the last two seasons. And the two teams that beat them were the Pittsburgh Penguins in 17, and then it was the Washington Capitals in 18. And both those two teams went on to win the Cup. So maybe we haven't really understood what this team's made of because they've gotten beat by the team that won the Cup. So maybe this team wasn't that far off, but nonetheless, they were a wild card team coming in this year, going against, obviously, the Tampa Bay Lightning, which was setting records for the most wins in the season. They were looked unstoppable, and this team did a real unique thing where a lot of times in sports when you have pending UFAs, you know, you move them. You try to get some assets for them, and this team obviously doubled down, and they said, no, we're keeping those guys. Not only are we keeping them, we're going to pick up some studs also. So this team has the star power now, and they're a team that's always been a very deep team that plays the game with a pure identity of hard work and in-your-face kind of hockey, and they're frustrating. They're frustrating superstars. We know that they frustrated Nikita Kucherov and the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, and Kucherov had 128 points this year, which is the most in God knows how long in the National Hockey League. So, and then this round, they're keeping the best line in hockey off the board, you know, and frustrating them in the process. So, Torts has them playing a great style, and right now, Sergei Bobrovsky's on top of the hockey goaltending world.
Mike Rupp joining us, a 14-year NHL vet, a Stanley Cup champion. You can watch him on NHL Tonight, which airs live before and after every playoff game. So, Mike, there was a moment late in the game where there was a stoppage in play. Columbus defenseman Scott Harrington was on his knees just outside the crease, and then Brad Marchand punched him in the back of the head and then skated off. In your opinion, what was worse, the punch in the back of the head or the fact that he bolted before Harrington could do anything about it?
I would say the skating away. And, I mean, if you're – listen, we're not going to sit here and pretend that it's all trim and proper in the NHL playoffs, and Brad Marchand's never kind of even been close to towing that line as a player. You know, I don't think it's a suspendable offense. I think it's a dirty one. 100% it's dirty, but he's been known to do those dirty things. But I don't know. I was always under the thought process when you play the game that – listen, if you're going to do something, there's consequences to it. Just stand up to it, and then it's fine, and it goes away. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff he does. I think even more on the standpoint of what frustrates me is if I'm a Bruins fan and I'm sitting here watching this, you know, you look in the with Brad Marchand at 100 points this season, and he's been unnoticeable in this first round except for incidents like this. And you got to give credit to Columbus for stymieing him and Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak, but when you have instances like this, and you look back, I think it was in game one, he lines up for a face-off with Cam Atkinson in overtime and just stomps on the stick with his skate, breaks his stick blade. Listen, you are flirting with the referee, saying, you're not going to call this, it's overtime, so I'm going to do whatever the heck I want. And the point is, between that incident you said last night in game three and the one in game one with a stomp on the stick, those are pretty clear-cut penalties. And both of them were missed by the referees. And what you're doing here is the first one happened in overtime. This one happened in the closing minute of the game when you're down by one. He should be in the box. So why are you risking all this for some foolish, stupid play that, you know, it just doesn't really make sense to me. And the fact of the matter, too, is you're talking about one of the top players in the league in Marchand. If this team's going to need a power play at some point in this series, and if I'm a referee and this is a small community that these guys, listen, they watch this, you're trying to embarrass them by being very sneaky and sneaking under the radar and making these things happen, I'll put my whistle away with Brad Marchand. So you can drape all over him, you can clutch, grab, hook him. He ain't getting a call the rest of the way, and the Bruins might need that.
Mike Rupp joining us at such a key point. That is such a key point. These guys, look, they're human. They've got memories. They're going to remember. So if they don't call it right now, it probably will come back and bite them. So, Mike, really quickly, the Islanders are down 0-2 to the Hurricanes in their series. New York dominated Pittsburgh in the first round. What has changed in this series?
They haven't gotten so – when we go back to at the beginning of this conversation, we said that the by committee, that the Islanders are a spitting image of that. They are a group that's not really – they're not really star power driven. They have Matt Barzal, who was rookie of the year last year, and he's a budding superstar. But at this rate, this team is just very timely goals, very shrewd defensive play. They don't give up much, and they got that contributions in the first round. All of a sudden, the goaltending is kind of – not the goaltending, the goals have dried up a little bit, and now this team seems – in a tough spot. They're going against another team that's kind of the same image of them. They're looking in the mirror when they're playing against the Carolina Hurricanes. So right now the goals have kind of dried up. But if you're talking about gameplay and you're talking about through two games, so 120 minutes plus, because one of the games is in overtime, if you're talking about that, they've controlled a lot of the aspects of the game. So I think it's just about staying the course. Got to find a way to break through here. Listen, you got to look at what you do to frustrate other teams is being had to you. You frustrate them. You try to slow them down, make them take chances. Don't take chances. Just keep staying the course, and things will go through at some point.
We're talking to Mike Rupp. Now, Mike, you played 14 years in the NHL, and you had numerous playoff runs. You can speak to this. On the outside looking in, watching the NHL playoffs, it's clear it's an absolute grind physically and mentally. But as somebody who's been through it, how would you describe it?
You know what, the craziest part, I think, when people always ask that is the physical, I'll give you the physical side of it, is you come into training camp and you might have, you know, Joe Smith that comes into training camp and he's all jacked and he's, you know, put on 15 pounds of muscle in the summer and you're looking like, holy crap, this guy put in some work this summer. If I wish we took before and after, when you come into training camp pictures and then after the playoff pictures, guys look depleted. Their muscle is depleted. They look run down. Their faces are set in. The physical aspect is very real. But the whole playoffs, it's almost all mental. It's all mental because these things that we're talking about here, even the struggle, for example, New York Islanders, you've got to stay mentally strong. You can't open yourself up. It takes one play to flip a series, and you can't make yourself vulnerable. So it's a real mental challenge, and you're playing every other day. It's just a routine. The rest of the world, I remember when I played, the rest of the world stopped. I mean, when you go on late playoff runs, my bills are piling up at home. I haven't paid them. You're sitting here. Nothing else exists. You are eating to perform on the ice. You are sleeping to perform on the ice. You are doing nothing but eat, sleep, and live in hockey, and that's fun. It's the best time of year.
So you go through something like that, Mike, and when you lay it out like that, you go through the grind, you get all the way to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final against Anaheim, you score the eventual game winner, you assisted on two more goals in the 3-0 win over the Ducks. What do you remember about that game, and how would you describe hoisting the cup after winning Game 7 at home?
You know what, the crazy part about it is when you sit there and you look, and I'm not trying to answer it like a hero. When you're sitting there, when I look back at my career, that was one of the most calm games, big stage games. I mean, obviously, I was probably more calm in a regular season game, but the bigger stage games I played in, I was so calm before that game. And I remember thinking back, I was green to it. I didn't know what the heck's going on. I was a rookie. And so I'm looking at my veteran players on the team, and I'm like, all right, well, you know, Scott Stevens looks exactly the same way as he normally does. Marty Brodeur's sipping on a coffee and joking around. I remember sitting there before the game in our pregame snack, and I remember Ken Danico and John Madden, the hockey player, of course, were sitting there, and we were talking about, they were just telling stories, good old-fashioned stories about the craziness the old NHL used to have, and just joking around and just hooting and hollering. And those guys in the locker room to keep it light, I'm like, what am I nervous about? These guys are acting like it's just an ordinary game here. So the veteran players are so key in keeping everybody calm. If you got a guy who's a jokester and a prankster, keeps it light in the locker room, they better be doing that in that situation. And we had that in New Jersey. So it allowed me to go out there and perform and hoist the cup. That's all I ever dreamed about as a kid. So it still doesn't seem real. It's great getting together with some of those guys that you won a cup with and just kind of reminiscing about some stories. Something that'll use with you forever.
That's got to be the best thing ever when you get together with those guys. So finally, when you mentioned, I mean, you mentioned some huge, huge names in the sport. Those guys that were that loose before Game 7, I mean, why? Were they wired like that and that's the way they were? Were they guys who had done the work and the preparation? How could those guys be that loose before the biggest game of their lives?
Well, they were all a little bit different. Scott Stevens, I don't know if he was loose, but he was exactly the same. He was very intense all the time. So
right.
He was exactly the same way he was. He was just serious. You know, you can have a conversation with him. You go up. Marty Brodeur, you know, he just casually, I remember this part of his routine would always, he'd go and he'd just sit in a stall and he'd just sip at a coffee and just, you know, just yipping about whatever it was from dinner the night before to stories about guys and just hanging out. Some of the more loose guys were, you know, the Ken Danico telling old fight stories and laughing. And Ken Danico's got a, you know, very contagious laugh that just kind of goes, and he just, the guys are joking around. Guys are, you know, saying the little lines that they say before games and just cracking jokes. I mean, that stuff is so big because when you're a young player, you know, I'm trying not to
freak
to
out.
Spoil my drawers there. And so watching these guys makes you feel like it's just another game.
A 14-year NHL vet. He is a Stanley Cup champ. Once again, you can watch Mike Rupp on NHL Tonight. It airs live before and after every playoff game. Mike, really nice to have you on. That was great. Appreciate you. And I appreciate the conversation. Thanks, Mike.
Anytime, Jim. Thanks, buddy.
Matt in Vancouver, the belligerent knuck. What's up, Matt?
What up, Rome?
What up, dude?
Hey, man, I saw those pics of Nooch hanging with Matt in L.A. and Big Daddy Feast in Studio City. Hey, Matt, do you not have access to a mirror, man? You look like a smelly criminal photo bomber trying to pickpocket those SoCal stay-at-home clones. And then we got Shaft in Buffalo talking all kinds of smack-off junk. 2 years removed from his long, lonely ride in the smacky choppa. Hey, Rick, everybody is sick of you, and you're uglier than the new bowling ball working for Rome. And Rome, Rick sits in his dilapidated townhouse with his Lena Dunham pig wife, dreaming of having my look, dreaming of having my game, while looking like a broke, bifocal phallus. And Rome, I'm putting the whole smack off field on notice. I'm cutting through everyone in the field who gets in my way, Rome. Foreign and domestic. Peace.
Peace. Matt in Vancouver, I can't wait. Rackham Alvey. June 21st. He just RSVP'd it. Let's go to the D, Sam in Detroit. It's good to have you, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great, Sam.
Can I give you about five or six? How about number one, Yul Brynner? Number two, Kirk Gibson's son. Number three, Telly Savalas. Number four, Jay Glazer. Number five, Buddha. Number six, Ernie Shavers.
My man, Sam Rackham. Hey, Sam, have a great day. Ernie Shavers. All right, the new guy is not African American. It's not Ernie Shavers. I know that. Let's go back to his other guesses very quickly. And by the way, new guy, this is not in any way complimentary. Yul Brynner, Kirk Gibson's son, Telly Savalas, Jay Glazer, Buddha, and Ernie Shavers. I mean, are any of those guys even still alive? Glazer is. And the guys that are alive, are any of them under 90? New guy. Hey, can you all get off the new guy? Like, I understand this is the way it is. Everybody's fair game in the jungle. Me, the XR4TI, all of you, who we interview. Everybody's fair game. But can you get off this guy already? I don't want him to quit and have to replace him, too. He doesn't need me to take up for him, especially since he is here to do it himself. Let's go to Green Bay. Caleb, what's going on?
Jim, Rome, what the hell is up, my
friend? What's up, bro? What's up?
Dude, I'm fired up to be back in the jungle. I take complete ownership of my absence. I apologize for it, but I'm back now because I got your smack-off invitation in the mail yesterday. I'm flattered that you remembered me. It came in this pretty blue envelope with this fancy calligraphy on it. Did Adam Hawk do this by hand? It's pretty impressive. If this radio thing doesn't work out, and clearly it's looking like it's not, maybe there's a second career in it for him. Hey, Benny and Wisco, that was a cute little jab you took at me the other day with that Sierra Mist bomb. I thought it was pretty funny, but as many things as people pick on me for, at least I can say words with the letter S without any ambiguity as to whether I have a lisp or not. Seriously, bro, in the first grade, were you hooked on phonics or hooked by a bass fisherman? You sound like Mike Tyson hired a speech therapist. But, Jim, I'm watching the show on TV. Is it Take Your Grandfather to Work Day? Seriously, the new guy looks so old. Robert wasn't training him how to do his job. He was showing him how to use one of them newfangled computation machines. This guy hasn't been around electricity since the last time he flew a kite in a thunderstorm. Honestly, you have Keith Arnold drinking out of that disgusting cup he never washes, and now you have Benedict Arnold sipping ale from a mug made of whale bone. But it's cool because if the Stew studio ever gets chilly in the winter, you can ask Charles Ingalls over there to chop some firewood for the stove. I don't know who's going to drop dead first, me from the cholesterol or the new guy from the sudden dopamine rush of his first Twitter notification. But seriously, Thanos, we jab and we jest and we joke around. It's an initiation. It's a rite of passage. We only make fun of the ones we love, and also Dan in Denver. Anyway, Jim, I got to bounce, but before I do, I had a question for you. I hate to be that guy, but can I borrow the Space Jam prop for the smack-off? I was going to do a tandem call with Tanya Harding, and we needed an equalizer. Thanks. On Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin. All right, Caleb. You can rack him. On Wisconsin.
Good night!